The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 138 for Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites, and sometimes video games. We will get into that in just a second with our guest, Mr. Luke Page of Zombies Ate My Podcast and the newly minted iTunes Ready Off the Cuff, episode one. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you for having me again.
Always a pleasure. It's always good. The first couple weeks of the month are always planned out and very interesting for me because I get to talk with you and Hammond inside the first 2 weeks, and it's always really fun.
Hammond's awesome. I just listened to last week's episode actually today.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, see, this is the thing. I don't actually listen to the show back. Every once in a while, like once every six episodes, I listen for quality assurance, like, you know, recording stuff, like volume and balance and music and things, especially if I make any changes to the template that I use. But I don't often listen back just because I'm here.
I don't listen to the ones I'm on.
Right.
I just skip them.
But it's kind of cool for you because you're only on one a month, right? So you can you can totally take advantage and listen to the other ones.
That, and I want to make sure I don't cover the same things he does. So
yeah, and I have a hard time keeping up with that man because Hammond he talks about a lot of really cool stuff. I think it's just because of the nature of his other podcasts that he's able to just kind of pull so much from the internet, and he always seems to be two steps ahead of me, which I appreciate and I utilize on the show.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So I've been really busy. I've been under the radar. I've been behind on my show notes, behind on Comics Coast to Coast too. Mainly because I had a big contract that was being pushed out last week, which I think I mentioned on the show. I can now talk about it. The illustrated article that I was working on for collegehumor.com is live. You can find that at collegehumor.com. I think you just do a search for my name in their little search box. I'll throw a link up here in the chat room for everybody. And of course, I'll put one on the in the show notes. And as a matter of fact, I tweeted about it. So if you're listening live, just go to twitter.com/Joel Duggan and look about an hour and a half ago. And I posted a link to the article.
It is fantastic.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I really enjoy... one, working with the guys and gals at College Humor. They're really, really funny people. This one was in particular was written by Ross Snow. It's a funny, funny article about dieting and what the world looks like when you're on a diet. So there's a bunch of paired illustrations about what the real world looks like and then what it looks like when you're on a diet. So it was my responsibility to illustrate all of the gags, all of the dialogue, with the exception of a couple of speech balloons that I kind of ad-libbed and kind of put my own spice on. Everything was written by Ross, but illustrated by me. And I get to do a little bit of graphic design on some of these, which is nice. The last one I did, which was for the Evolve video game, that was, again, written by somebody else, name escaping me at the moment. I was able to do the illustration, but also the graphic design, which I'm really starting to dig. I really enjoy doing the layout and trying to solve these visual problems about how to do like a flow chart that's, you know, 4,000 pixels tall as you're taking somebody on a journey as to whether or not they should take on a giant mutating alien. The answer seems to be predominantly yes, you should, because I guess that game is really fun.
I hear mixed things. I know people that like it. There was a tournament where I was this weekend that involved it.
Oh, cool. And where were you this weekend?
This weekend I was in Boston for PAX East, Penny Arcade East. It is a video game, board game, and all-around geek convention in Boston. They also do one now. They started in Seattle. They now do one in Texas. They now do one in Boston. And they also do one in Australia.
Wow. So I know there's PAX, like PAX Original.
Yep.
PAX East. Prime. PAX, that's what they call PAX. The original is PAX Prime now?
Yes.
So what do they call the other ones?
PAX South is in Texas, and PAX East is Boston.
Okay, and then...
And PAX Aus is PAX Australia.
You think they would have called it something more clever, like PAX Aussie or...
Yeah, or PAX Down Under or something.
PAX, yeah, well, PAX Down Under. I can see why they wouldn't do that. It'd be a little cliche, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What would you call... What would be a snappy name for PAX in Australia?
Like PAX, no
I feel like you'd have to go into like the wildlife, like PAX Wallaby or yeah.
PAX Tasmania.
PAX Mania. I don't know. That could work. It's got a good double meaning. See, they should hire us as PR. No, they shouldn't. They should.
No,
do that
not at all.
But that would be a very busy con, I would imagine.
It's a busy con in general. One of the cooks, I was taking photos from a balcony of the show floor, and it was right near the lunch area, and one of the cooks was taking photos with his phone so he could send them home. And he commented to me about, you know, you guys fill this auditorium every year. It's crazy to, and I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, I don't understand. He was a middle-aged guy, so I kind of got that he didn't understand. It wasn't his scene.
Right.
And he's like, I don't know. He goes, I talked to one of the security guards, and they said that, and this was on Saturday, that there were 45,000 people in the convention center on Saturday.
Wow.
And that there was an estimated supposed to be 85,000 people came through the convention center by the end of the weekend.
Wow. That's a lot of smelly nerds.
And you know what? You'd be surprised how much of it doesn't smell.
No, I make the joke.
I've made the joke myself, and then I've been corrected.
Yeah.
And I've been like, and then I thought about it, and I went, you know, for having to line up in really gross looking lines, and be near people that look like they probably smell really gross, not that bad.
And really, conventions, comic culture, sci-fi, video game culture has kind of saturated the market to the point now where when you're at a convention, I mean, the largest convention I've really ever been at, where it's like the general public is HalCon. And I feel like their numbers are probably in the 10,000 range. Sam's going to correct me in the chat room in like 10 seconds here. But there's not really that many that I experience of the stereotypical nerd, like the person that comes up to your booth and is like the comic book version of a real human being. Like, you know, they've got this really weird kind of scruffy beard. They're not looking you in the eye. They kind of smell funny. You know, if they shake your hand, it's really sweaty. And their conversation is just really, really awkward. It really doesn't happen that much. Most of the people, and I want to say like 99% of the people that I meet at a con are really just like you and I, you know, like they're out there having a good time. It's a great conversation. I'm a talker. I'm a podcaster. Go figure. And I really enjoy being at conventions. So Sam is correcting me at 6,000 at HalCon. Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of people here locally that are all into this sci-fi fantasy scene because Halifax, the population of Halifax is maybe 400,000. And that's like everything. That's like Halifax, Dartmouth, Bedford, Sackville, Hammonds Plains. Like it's everywhere. So there's not a huge population to really push that to the max. Boston has to have what? A couple million?
I wouldn't even guess what Boston's population size is. I know it's bigger than my entire state. My entire state has a size of is 3 million people.
Yeah.
We're one of the smallest states in the country, so.
Yeah, no, I figured as much. But that's cool. I mean, that's a lot of people. So, like, what were the highlights for you of PAX East then?
Well, I'm very different when I go to PAX East. There's so much to do. I know people that go there just to play like League of Legends. They have like a League of Legends tournament there every year. I don't care. League of Legends is not my scene. I don't understand the MOBA trend that everybody seems to be in on.
The thing that I don't understand is that I see the art. I see the concept art, and I would love the opportunity to work on a video game like that because the characters are just over the top. They're fun. They're bright. They're colorful. They're dynamic. They've got all the things that you and I love about like sci-fi fantasy all rolled into one game.
Yep.
I've tried the games. I had fun. I tried, what's the other one? Not League of Legends. Dota. I tried Dota. I liked Dota. It was fun. I didn't play it competitively. I only played with friends. So I didn't have the whole, you know, like noob kind of experience.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, after an afternoon, I was kind of done. I could keep on doing it if I had time, but I was just more interested in like, okay, well, he was really cool to look at. Who can I try next? Like, I did not have a strategy. It wasn't about winning. It was like, I like this guy because I like his fireball effect, not that I'm particularly good with him.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I kind of was in the same boat. And so there's people that go there for that. Then a lot of bigger publishers bring their big, brand new games or games that are coming out in a couple of months, and you can line up and play those. I really wasn't excited by that this year.
Really?
Everything that was there was stuff I've kind of already seen.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Blizzard was there, and they were showing off the new expansion to Hearthstone, which is going to be out in like a month. So.
Yeah, and Hearthstone is having a birthday today, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is. Is it 1 year?
I think it's 1 year of the official release. I think it was in beta for a really long time.
Yeah, it was in beta for like a year too.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's been around for longer than a year, but I think officially it's been 1 year. Yeah.
But Blizzard was there showing that, and they were also showing off Overwatch.
Ooh, no! See, this I'm interested in.
But see, I was gonna get in the line, but it was a 2.5 hour wait.
Oh God.
And I went, I can go see Overwatch, stand in this line for Overwatch for 2.5 hours, or I can go play the indie games where there's no lines.
So when you're in these lines, can you at least, if you decide not to get in the 2.5 hour line, is there at least a place where you can go and stand and watch the people that are playing on a big screen somewhere?
It depends on the booth.
Okay. Because, this is the thing. I wouldn't really care about getting my hands dirty with Overwatch, but I would really like to see it. Like, I'd like to see a Twitch stream of it happening.
It depends on what company and what booth. Some booths put up walls, so you cannot see anything unless you go through the line.
Oh, I can see that.
And I'm pretty sure the Blizzard booth was like that.
And I can also understand from a convention standpoint that if you get a great big screen at the front of your booth or somewhere's, you know, in front of the booth, like visible from the, like a general location, you're going to kind of stop traffic, which is not going to be good for the con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have what they call enforcers, which are the volunteers for staff.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an enforcer at the end of every line being like, this is the end of the line. The line is now at max capacity. Come back in an hour.
Right.
And I mean, every line is like that.
Yeah.
There's somebody pretty much standing at the end of every line.
That's a long day, just kind of folding your arms and going, nope.
Yep. and if you don't, and okay, so I will explain my little adventure. The convention begins on Friday. And before the convention began, they sent out an email to everybody that was attending. And they said, hey, listen, Boston is cold. There's snow on the ground. Mm. If you're not familiar with the Northeast, it's freezing right now. The building opens at 8 a.m. Please don't start lining up at 8 a.m. Straggle in. You'll get a chance to see what you want to see. Please do not line up early. It's not worth the effort. We don't want anybody to get hurt. We don't want anybody to get frozen. So when I arrived Friday, I checked into my hotel at 9 a.m. The convention floor opens at 10 a.m. I puttered around for an hour or two and unpacked in the hotel room and said, okay, it's 10 o'clock. I can start heading over there. The crowd will have died down.
Mm.
We got in, no problem, no lines, went right down to the show floor, checked some stuff out, got out of people's way, had some lunch, piece of cake. Had a fun day. Saturday, I said, well, because we were up really, really, really late. We went to a late night panel that was at 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
It was geek travel, and these people told their stories about going to geeky places all over the country and all over the world.
Wow, that'd be fun.
One of them is one of the panelists was Tom Clancy, the writer.
Wow.
His son.
Oh, okay.
Because he's a video game developer.
Right.
So he was there talking about how he and his wife spent a night in one of those underground sea lab things that's actually a hotel under the water.
Oh yeah, like the in like the UAE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how he did that, and telling about his adventure of doing that. One of them was a freelance video games journalist, Rob Rath, who 2 years ago, his wife took a job in Hong Kong as a teacher, so they moved to Hong Kong. So when she's not teaching, they're traveling all over Asia, because apparently flying from Hong Kong anywhere is like dirt cheap. So they went to the Amazon and stuff for like no money.
Wow.
And there was all kinds of stories like that, and it was really interesting. So the following morning, Saturday morning, we got up late because we were exhausted. We didn't get back to our hotel room till almost midnight. And when we get back, we get ready to go to the convention. They have a shuttle that picks you up right out front of your hotel.
Nice.
Takes you right to the convention. I was like, awesome. Get on board the shuttle. And the shuttle guy goes, just so you know, there's a line. And we went, oh, yeah, there's a line. Because there was a line the day before, but the line was like, you know, maybe to the street.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't that far, probably about 100 feet.
Yeah, that's like a line for a movie, you know?
Right, it's not bad. I can handle that. No, no, no. The if you look up in Boston, where the Boston convention is, the line goes from the line went from the front of the convention center all the way down the entire length of Congress Street to the first red light, which is literally 3 miles down the street.
Oh my God.
And we get there and we're at the convention center, and the officer that was directing traffic goes, sorry, ma'am, you need to go to the back of the line, which is that way. Single file down the street. So the line began with us going up the line to the back of the line.
Wow.
And a line queued behind us. We were about an hour getting in. And this was after we got there at like 11.
That is a long time standing outside in the cold.
Yeah. It was crazy. So the worst part happens. We get about maybe 30 feet from... They had security doing bag checks to make sure that nobody was bringing in any weapons or illegal substances.
Yep.
And we're about 20 feet from bag check. And Erica, my wife, looks down and goes, where's my wallet?
Mm.
And I went, oh, my God. When did you see it last? And she goes, well, I had it when we got on the shuttle. But some point from getting on the shuttle and going through the line, her wallet disappeared.
Oh, no.
And I went, oh, no. So she got all upset, started crying, and I went, let's get through security. We'll grab one of the security guards inside. We'll see if they can radio the shuttle. You probably just dropped it on the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's probably holding it. We'll figure it out. So we get through the security checkpoint. Guard's looking at me funny because she's starting to cry. We go in, and the PAX security has they have an info booth right there. I walk up to the info booth, and I go, okay, so we have a problem. The guy goes, maybe I can help. That's what I'm here for. What do you need? I said, we took the shuttle from our hotel here. Some point between the shuttle and here, she lost her wallet. Can you radio the shuttle? Find out if maybe she dropped it on the thing? Guy goes, hold on a minute. Grabs the guy next to him. Guy next to him comes over and goes, okay, what color is the wallet? And she goes, maroon. He goes, what's the name in the wallet? And she goes, Erica Page. And the guy goes, is this your wallet? Pulls nice. It out, hands it to her. And the first thing she did was freak because she had money or credit cards and all that stuff in the wallet. Opens it up. Nobody touched anything.
Wow.
And it was like, this is amazing. How honest do people be? Are people?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool.
So that was 2 days of convention food. And
yeah, and you don't know whether she lost the wallet 20 feet from bag check or whether she lost it 3 miles from bag check.
Right. He said that someone had just turned it in like the last 15 minutes.
Right. So probably not too far away from the door.
Right.
That's cool, though. That's really cool.
It works. It works.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what, like, I mean, I know that you're an indie game guy. So, I mean, obviously, the travel panel was a big deal. What were the games that you pulled away from PAX East?
Well, there's a game coming out called Dragon Fin Soup.
That's a great title for a game.
Yep, and it's got some really great art. It's something that got Kickstarted last year.
Maybe that's why it sounds familiar.
It got Kickstarted last year, and they've been kind of on the down low on when it's coming out and stuff. It's supposed to be out this year, and last year they didn't have anything playable. They just had a video trailer of what they wanted to do, mm-hmm. and they had a bunch of flyers and stuff. And it looked really neat. It looked like it was up my alley. This time, they had a playable demo. And it's awesome. It's like a role-playing game. And it's in the genre of a roguelike, meaning sure. that death is permanent, and you move and take your turn, and then every other monster on the board takes a turn.
Right.
So it's very strategic, and you have to kind of plan ahead and do stuff like that. And basically, the basic premise is you're kind of like, what's her name? Little Red Riding Hood.
Right.
But you're hunting monsters in the woods with a shotgun.
Of course, why not?
With her pet wolf.
Right.
And that's the premise of the game, is you take on bounties to find certain monsters in the woods, and there's sort of like she has a dark past that you kind of unlock a little bit as you play through the game. And it's designed so that when you begin a new game, it literally reinvents the world. So that it won't be the same. Like, you won't have to be able to find the dungeon where you got the guy the first time.
Right. So
it reinvents the world.
It's like Diablo, where whenever you go in a dungeon, the goals are still the same, but the map has been like procedurally generated.
Right. And the monsters can be different as well.
It's pretty smart for indie games to do that, because if it's a small game or a short game, you need to add some sort of replayability to it.
And it's coming to PC, Vita, PlayStation 4. It's coming to everything.
Very cool.
Including iPad, I think.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I like the concept art. Like, I'm nosing through the website right now, and there's no real concept art gallery that I'm seeing very easily, but there's art adorning the website. Like, it's a very...
The game looks very much similar to the art.
Yeah, it's got a bright sort of cartoony look too, but yeah. Painted. You know, like the grass is very green, the... You know, dirt's chocolate brown. There's orange tiles on the roofs, like that kind of thing. But it's very well rendered and looks like a lot of fun.
I had a blast with it, and I only played it for about maybe 20 minutes, which for a demo was really good. Most places the demos are like 5 minutes because they want to get you in and move you out. So, other than that, I also saw. Going through my flyers here because I'm trying to remember the title I wanted to talk about. Ah, they had a game called Wander. It was weird. You start out, it's just a first-person screen, and you're in the woods, and you start wandering. And slowly the camera starts to pan out, and you realize that you're like a tree. And you're walking through the woods, and then slowly you get bigger and realize that the world is very different, and you can interact with things in a different way. And it's very pretty. It's very concept-y. They haven't finished what they want to do with the game, but for an indie game, it was absolutely gorgeous.
Nice.
Which is not something you get to see very often. Very often, indie games are, here's some 8-bit art, or some hand-drawn art, and we've fiddled together some gameplay. Here you go. This is a beginning of what we want to do. And this was like, they had everything but the gameplay.
Yeah. Is there a website for the game?
Let me look at the flyer.
I figured, you might, I think it's Wander the Game, W-A-N-D-E-R.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I had the right one.
Yep.
Oh, this does look pretty.
It was gorgeous. It was kind of slow as a game, but the concept was there.
I really appreciate the courage that indie developers have when, I want to say everything, but when a lot of stuff out there is MOBA action or, you know, Overwatch type stuff, Call of Duty first person shooter. What's the one? Not, is it Titan? What's the latest one that was for Xbox recently?
Titanfall.
That one. Very action, very fast games. Not that I've played them, but, you know, I've seen enough people play them. I really, you know, admire the courage of someone changing the pace dramatically. You know, like you're just kind of meant to wander around, maybe follow a story, but there's not things jumping at you. You're not running, shooting, jumping, you know, doing anything super. You're just kind of experiencing an environment. And I think that's tricky too. Like, you've got to be able to do that just right. So was it compelling or was it like,
it was just interesting. It wasn't what I expected. Usually everything at PAX is usually here, go blow this up here. Go shoot this.
Yeah.
Here, do this. Like, everything is always action. And this was less like, I talked to the woman that was showing at the booth and she was like, yeah, no, we haven't put the puzzles in the game. We've got some ideas on stuff that we want to do. And we're working on that, but we wanted people to just see that we have this woods area and we have like a village that you can find in the woods and explore. And this is what we want to do. And it was just very slow and you just stroll through the woods. And I was like, it's very pretty and it's interesting, but I'd really like to see the puzzles. And they're like, yeah, that stuff will get added in a few months.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, the concept art is beautiful. Like, I posted a link here in the chat room to some of the artwork. It's very, very cool. It's going to be tough to be at a convention where everybody is just seething to have a beta, to have something that's fully functional. And you're like, yeah, so we've got the look of the game down, but the game itself, like the game part is not there. And that's going to be a really difficult thing to pitch to a gamer standing in front of you, right?
Yeah. And you'd be surprised. There are usually like two or three booths like that, and they usually don't have a line.
Hmm.
This game had a line, and I was like, I skipped the line and just kind of stood to the side and watched other people play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I don't really think I need to play this, but I'm having fun watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. So just while you mentioned that, does PAX do like a live stream? Like, can people that can't make it to PAX?
Yes.
Do like a digital ticket?
I was going to mention it. Actually, if you go to their Twitch page.
Okay.
They Twitch anything that is in the main hall for a panel, and anything that is in one of the other panels, they stream all that, and then Twitch themselves teams up and does like wandering around the floor.
Oh, cool. I mean, I figured Twitch would be involved.
They had the biggest booth this year. Like, it was kind of crazy. I was like, they always have a booth, but this year their booth seemed to be like twice the size.
Hmm. So was there any major titles making a lot of noise? Like, or any news from like, you know, Batman, Gotham Knight or anything like that?
Usually that stuff is there. None of that stuff was there this year.
Really?
Interesting. It was not, like I said earlier, I go and usually last year when I went, there was a couple of major titles that I wanted to see. So I stood in a line, played a couple of them. That's awesome. Moved on. This year, there was nothing AAA that grabbed me that I wanted to go play. They had stuff that was for Evolve. There was an Evolve booth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the stuff for Blizzard, but I didn't want to stand in the line for 2.5 hours for that.
Yeah.
And then everything else seemed to be, they were showing The Witcher 3 at one of the booths.
Now, I've seen that. Like, I've seen in-game footage of that. There wasn't really so much a battle. It was just kind of like a proof of concept with the lighting in that game. And
that game is gorgeous.
It is stunning. Like, I am notoriously picky about video game graphics, probably just the animator's eye in me. And I mean, I can appreciate it for what it is, or realize, hey, okay, it's got, you know, limitations. And I used to be a PC gamer, so then going to a console, there's always that kind of like, well, the console stuff is always a little bit, you know, a little bit less. But I mean, like, I played Black Flag on an Xbox 360, and it was really good. The only thing that really distracted me was the shadows that kept on flickering.
Yep.
And then I watched some of it and played some of it on Ryan's PS4. Or saw cutscenes from it or something like that on his PS4 a couple of years ago, and it looked incredible. I mean, I can appreciate that The Witcher 3 is just, I mean, it just looks, it's so bizarre to just remember, you know, Super Mario on the NES system when I was 10, and then realize that, you know, if I mean, not that I have the time to game right now or the money, but, you know, if I was to have like a PS4 or an Xbox and be able to play The Witcher 3 and like, that thing that's moving on the screen, I'm actually controlling that. Like, that's not a movie I'm watching. That's not a CG movie from, like, Pixar. It's like, I'm actually playing this game. It's so crazy to see how cool things are looking. And it's not so much the characters. It was the light. It was like the sun was setting, and this character was coming up on a couple of bandits on the road. And, like, the dappling light through the trees, how it sort of hid the guy that was camouflaged in the bushes, and man, it was really, really pretty.
CD Projekt makes a new engine for those games, and it's just kind of crazy.
Mm.
Yeah. But they were there. There was a lot this year. It was kind of disappointing for me in a way. There was a lot more vendors there selling products.
Right, so merchandise, not games.
Yes, and I don't mind the T-shirt vendors. I always buy a couple of T-shirts and stuff, or a sweater or something while I'm there. That's geeky. That's kind of tradition for me. But it's like, there was 4 headphone booths. Gunner Optics was there to show off their glasses, and their booth was even bigger than it was in the previous years. And I don't mind that those guys are there, but that's not why I go to the convention, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the indie stuff was awesome. One of the cleverest indie games I saw was a game called 12 Minutes, and it is not a 12 minute game. It is Groundhog Day, the murder mystery. Basically, you play a guy who he gets off the elevator to go to his apartment, and you go inside the apartment, and your wife tells you to go sit down on the chair or help make the dinner table and whatever. It takes about 12 minutes. In 12 minutes, there's a knock at the door. And before the knock happens, your wife tells you she's pregnant. Yay, happy. There's a knock at the door. And when you answer the door, a police officer comes in and arrests your wife for murdering her father.
Jeez.
And the first time you do this, it kind of puts you in a situation where you're hostile towards the police officer, and he hits you over the back of the head. You wake up, and you're on the elevator, and you're in front of the door again.
Okay, right on.
And so you got to do the whole 12 minutes over again. But now you know what's going to happen in 12 minutes. So you can try and hide in the closet, and the cop can kick down the door. And what ends up happening is since you know what's going on, you can have more dialogue choices with your wife.
Right, right on.
And so every time you go through a cycle, more dialogue options happen, and you can make more choices on what to say or how to handle a situation.
Interesting.
And it's very proof of concept. It's very early stages. The guy that's working on it, it's a pet project while he works on something for Sony.
Oh, nice. Those are the kind of games that I think my sister would like. She's not a big gamer, but she likes story. And I bought her the Game of Thrones iPad game or iPhone game for Christmas. And I know she's playing it because she was on vacation last week. And I haven't yet checked in with her to see whether she's liked it, whether she's completed it or not. I know she'll probably finish it before the 12th when Game of Thrones kicks up. But I haven't had a chance to really touch base with her on that. But speaking of TV and stuff like that, we should probably kind of move on into what we're watching. What any final thoughts on PAX? Anything else to mention?
If you get a chance to go to any of the PAXes, if you live near them and you like anything geeky, go.
They are seriously a good time.
I have so much fun. I had a Fitbit with me. I got one for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
I got 70,000 steps over the course of the weekend.
Holy shit. How many pounds did you lose?
I felt like I lost 10.
That's amazing.
So.
Right on. Well, I haven't had a lot of time for games. The one thing that I would poke around with if I had time would have been Hearthstone. But my iPad is old, so it doesn't play Hearthstone very well. So I don't tend to spend a lot of time on it there. I haven't really set aside any time for gaming. One morning the power went out and I was playing Monument Valley. And that's really, mobile is the extent of my gaming experience. And I usually have like 30 minutes. It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to wait for laundry to be finished. I'm just going to sit here and enjoy a cup of coffee in the sunshine and just, you know, relax.
I understand.
Yeah. Something that I have been doing, as I do need to eat. So I tend to watch TV when I eat, which is not, you know, like the greatest habit, I guess, in the world. But it allows me to get in new seasons of things like House of Cards. And that's what I've been watching though for the last week. I've not been binge watching. I'm only halfway through the season. Everything I'm going to tell you now is going to be spoiler free. So don't worry. I'm not going to be spoiling any of the content for season 3. And I won't drop any big plot points either. But I like from the whole series. But I really enjoyed season 1 and 2. Netflix, of course, gives you the whole season at once. But I've been pretty good. You know, like I watched maybe 2 a night on the weekend, late at night. You know, like you hit the couch at 11 o'clock and you play one and you're like, ah, well, I'm not super tired. I'll just watch one more. And that's good. And they range from like 45 to 55 minutes, give or take. But I've been watching them pretty steadily over dinner. So I tend to get at least one in a day when I'm eating a meal. And so I'm in and around episode 10 or 12. I am really, really enjoying season 3. If you did not like season 2, you will like season 3. I liked season 2. It wasn't the greatest. It dragged on in some places. This is giving me enough content and in particular character development that it really, there's no real cliffhangers. You just really want to know how this story is going to unfold. And that's, right, to me, a really good sign of a television show, of a series that is just well written, is not talking down to the viewer, and has the right kind of pacing that even though there's not this giant, like, what's going to happen next at the end of the episode, I still cannot wait to see how Frank and Claire are going to get, you know, handle this situation, or now that that situation has been handled, like what's going to happen next. And they don't smack you with it, but you can kind of, it's a political drama. So you can kind of figure out, all right, well, there's Russia's involved and then there's the Middle East and there's all this different stuff. So you're like, okay, I can sort of see where this might be going. Is that where they're going to take it? And then you can kind of predict what Frank and Claire do, but you really can't. And then you really have no idea because the characters are not on screen enough for, like, you know, other ambassadors or country leaders or other people that come into the story. You've got zero idea how they're going to react or pursue their own interests. Right. So I really enjoy it from that perspective. There is more than one storyline in the season. The secondary storyline, I'm not a fan of. Thankfully, it's not really forefront. It's definitely number two. You don't see it every episode, or if you do, it's not a whole lot for some episodes. I'm not a fan, and I don't want to get into, like, who it's about or why. It's funny that, like, I want to say there's probably, so far there's been 3 kind of arcs that I've been able to follow. Obviously Claire and Frank are the main one. Then there's a secondary and then the tertiary. And I found that the third one is actually more interesting than the second.
That kind of happens. I am personally about midway through the second season. I was not crazy about, I really liked it for like the first 4 or 5 episodes. And then some things start happening in the first season in the midway where I kind of went, you know what? I don't know if this show is for me. And I kind of walked away. And then somebody recently told me, no, you need to go back and at least finish the first season. And I found myself finishing it and basically marathoning up into where I am now. So
yeah, it. I mean, it's a great show.
It is.
Yeah.
But there are some moments where you literally go, I don't know if I like this.
This is and here's the thing, and this is not a spoiler. Frank and Claire are not nice people.
No.
Right? They're villains, period.
Yes.
But the way that they're developing the characters in season three, like, it pulls you in. Like, you can no longer throw up this wall of, like, well, they're evil people. I just want to see what kind of crazy, mad, evil thing they're going to do next. And nope, that's not the case at all. You really kind of, I don't want to say you feel for them, but they definitely pull you in emotionally in ways that you don't expect, which I was very impressed by.
Yeah.
It's just really good dialogue, great writing. I still really appreciate the whole Frank Underwood looking at the camera.
Yeah, and there's a couple moments in the second season where he doesn't do it. Like, there's like almost an entire episode where he doesn't talk to you as the viewer. And then all of a sudden he looks at you and he goes, did you think I forgot about you?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. The cinematography and storytelling and timing in that show is so good that you can tell from the camera angle, from how long they're holding on Frank, when he's going to turn and say something.
Yeah.
Right. So you have that anticipation. And I remember that time when that, you know, in you said second season?
Yeah.
Yeah. When they didn't do it. And what they were doing is they were lining up the pacing as if he was going to, and then he didn't.
Yes.
And you felt like he was ignoring you, right? Like it's such a, because you come to expect it. And it's such a great little, it's very tricky to break the fourth wall and do it well.
Yes.
And I feel like they handle it very well. One of the things that I was watching recently, actually it was the episode just before the show tonight, when I was eating dinner, there's a speech going on, and at that time, the two people are not in the same room, and you're watching one person and hearing the speech happening somewhere else, and there's a moment when the character closes doors. And at that time, the speech, which was kind of reflecting the mood of what was happening, you know, in a second location, when the doors were closed, the speech stopped. And then you were just alone with this person, and they went on to do other things. And it was just this really cool way of, like, having something hanging over this person, and then having the door closed being the, okay, I'm going to separate myself from this. Like, I need to take a breath here and just do my own thing. And it was really effective in the way that they were, like, hanging on that particular moment with the audio and how they kind of move forward with it. Anyway, so far the season three has been wonderful. I mean, I highly recommend the whole series to anybody. I think I've tried to get my parents to watch it, and I don't recall if they really enjoyed it. I think when Frank Underwood starts talking to the screen in the first season, I think that turned off my stepdad. I don't think he's a fan.
I see, that was my favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
It's when he talks, when they break the fourth wall, because you don't see that very often in anything.
No.
Any medium.
I can't think of another time that it's happened. I know it has. I mean, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is something that comes to mind.
Ferris Bueller does it. In the comic universe, Deadpool does it to you all the time. Does it all the time.
Yeah, well, comics are very different.
Yes.
Yeah, it's different than like a primetime show. Especially because it's a serious drama.
Yeah.
You know, like a Deadpool comic, he's pretty silly.
Yes.
But like the House of Cards is a serious political drama. Like, there's a lot of very serious topics being tackled. And so to have this kind of off-the-cuff fourth wall thing happening is a unique challenge, I think. That's it for me. I've been busy, so it's been nice to have, you know, a full season of House of Cards. Just like, I'm just going to play next. I don't have to think about what I'm watching. So what have you been watching?
I have had a whole lot of time myself either, but I have come across a couple of interesting shows. Will Forte has a show on Fox now called The Last Man on Earth. The premise of all the trailers was basically him riding around in a car and being all by himself, and it looked very much like he is all alone in the world, and they're trying to make a sitcom about it.
Interesting.
And my thought was, I don't know how I feel about this. This is either going to be brilliant or it's going to be the worst thing ever. And you know what? It's brilliant.
Nice.
The basic premise is a disease of some kind wiped everybody else off of Earth. And his name is Phil. And Phil drives around the world, around the country in a Winnebago. And the show begins with him with a map. And he goes to a state and he drives around and he stands up on things with like an intercom. And he's like, hello, is there anybody out there? Anybody? No? Okay. And then he gets back in the Winnebago and he drives away. And he finally gives up. He has been to all 50 states. He has not found any survivors. He is all alone in the world. And so he puts up signs everywhere. If you're looking for survivors, I'm in Tucson. And he paints them over like city signs and stuff with spray paint. Alive in Tucson. And so he drives back to Tucson. He goes into this huge mansion and rolls out the Oval Office rug from the White House.
Nice.
He brings in a Tyrannosaurus Rex head that he dragged from the Smithsonian. He has the painting of George Washington from the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, where he's standing over the river.
Yep,
the
yep,
famous painting.
Yep.
And he has it cut out of the frame, and he tapes it to the wall.
Oh, my God.
And you're like, wow, I can't believe that this is kind of hilarious. And so he's doing all these things because he's all alone, and he's, like, losing his mind, you know? And he decides he has a generator going so that he can watch TV, watch movies and stuff. And he's watching the movie with Tom Hanks on the island, Castaway.
Castaway, yeah.
And Tom Hanks is talking to the beach ball.
Volleyball, Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson. And he goes, that's not believable. I've been alone a long time. I'm not talking to inanimate objects. And then the next scene is him walking around with a beach ball with a face on it. And he's like, why didn't I do this sooner? I don't feel so alone anymore.
When you were explaining this, I was thinking about him walking down the stairs and passing the cutout of George Washington, and just kind of like very seriously and very solemnly just kind of nodding, going, George.
Yeah. And no, he does that. Like, he goes places.
Oh, does
and,
he
like,
really?
He goes places and he has like mannequins set up like behind the bar, and he talks to them. Like, he goes to the bar every day to get into, and he's like talking to things, and he has people arranged in a certain place so he could talk to them.
That's going to be really challenging as an actor.
It is. And it's brilliant because you see that he's got nothing to do all day, and there's no running water. There's no electricity unless he gets a generator going, and there's no running water. So he's like stuck with himself all day, and he starts using this toilet in the big house in the first episode. And he realizes that after like a few flushes, it's not going to work anymore.
Mm.
So he goes outside to the pool, goes out on the diving board, and cuts a hole in the end of it.
That's disgusting and amazing all at the same time.
Exactly. And so that's the whole first episode, is like him wandering around. And at the end of the episode, spoilers, I will spoil one thing, because you kind of see it coming at the end of the episode. He's not alone.
Ah.
There's somebody else. And you get introduced to them at the end of the episode. And it's not what you think. It starts going in directions that you're like, what? This is weird and hilarious, and it's quirky.
I feel like
it's really well written.
Nice. I feel like the apocalyptic kind of genre needs something like this.
Yes. Oh my God, he does some brilliant things. Like, he decides to go bowling, and so he sets up bowling balls and starts bowling in like a driveway, and then that gets boring. So he gets a pickup truck, puts a bunch of bowling balls in the back of the pickup truck, drives real fast, and then swerves so that all the balls go flying out of the back of the truck. And he can hit the pins with a bunch of bowling balls in a moving vehicle. It's nice. Really funny.
I'm just imagining the noise.
Oh, yeah. And then he smashes stuff. Like, he sets up a bunch of fish tanks and does the same thing.
Man. It kind of makes you wonder, right?
Yeah, and it's like, it's this, I was expecting it to be boring, or I was expecting it to have its kind of like ha-ha moments.
Yeah.
But it's so well written, and for a guy all alone on basically the whole show is him alone, you know, and it, you can definitely see where it's a very low budget, cost wise, because it's just him.
That's fine though. You don't need a big budget to do really good stories, right? I don't know. Like, I don't think I would be very, I would be such a goody-goody even with no one else around.
Oh, he is not.
Yeah, like
he runs red lights or stop signs, and he's like,
well, okay, I probably, for the longest time, I probably would stop at stoplights. Like, that's the sad part. I'm a rule follower for the moment when it comes to like the rest of the world.
Yes.
I would totally be the one stopping at a stoplight, even if I was the only person in town. I would still probably do that.
Yep.
Not that I wouldn't stop myself from walking into the local Toys R Us and coming out with all the Lego. Like, that's what I would be doing at home. I wouldn't be watching movies. I'm just like, hey, well, let's build ourselves a Death Star. Why not?
Oh, no, he builds the game Jenga. Mm-hmm. Like, where you push the blocks and they fall, the wooden blocks.
Mm-hmm.
He starts gluing them together and builds a really tall tower.
That's awesome. Just the kind of, you imagine the brainstorming session in the writing room for the show of just kind of like, all right, what would you do?
Like, that's kind of what this whole show feels like.
Yeah.
And they're three episodes in. I actually just watched the third episode tonight. And every episode, I kind of walk away laughing and going like, gee, I really want more of this.
Nice. I'm going to check this out. This is definitely, because I don't have a comedy that I'm watching right now. And I've been struggling to find one. I've watched some rom-coms here and there, and they're funny enough, but then they're over, like, you know, and you have to find something new. So I haven't found a show. I'm going to definitely check this out. This sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's very good. I can't recommend it enough.
Nice. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is sponsored, of course, by Tweaked Audio. You can visit tweakedaudio.com for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. Enter the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. They come in multiple different styles. Mic sets are available, and they're compatible with all kinds of different MP3 players and phones. And they come with lifetime warranty. So that's tweakedaudio.com, and the code, of course, is TCC. I'll start with my pick quickly at the top here. It is 3 hours long. I have not watched the whole thing. I have played the whole thing, though. It's Batman Arkham Origins, the movie. And this is what I was alluding to at the beginning of the episode when I said that my internet black hole the other evening led me to watching a couple of game trailers I hadn't seen. There was some stuff floating around from PAX. And then I saw this link on my YouTube page, and it is essentially someone that has taken the opening cutscenes and in-game cinematic cutscenes from Batman Arkham Origins, along with very streamlined gameplay, and made it into a 3 hours and change movie where they don't do any side missions. They follow the main story. And I thought, man, that's 3 hours. Like, I mean, I've played this game and I'm sure it'd be cool to watch. And, you know, people these days, they enjoy watching video games. And I thought, well, I haven't seen the opening for this in a while. I'll see where they start out. And look, 20 minutes later, I'm still watching.
Yep.
You know, I got through the point where he goes through the precinct and he fights Killer Croc and he beats him. Like, I mean, it's, you know, I was really, I could have spent at least an hour watching that, you know. And the only complaint that I have is that you are watching someone else play a video game. So the thing that I find a little kludgy about this stuff for this particular kind of game is because you're not the one hitting the buttons and making the character move, the way that the camera reacts to Batman fighting can be kind of disorienting. Like, it's a little bit weird when you're viewing it. It's not at all something that you feel in the game. If you're playing the game, when you duck left and the camera kind of spins, you kind of want it to, so it doesn't bug you. But when you're not thinking, I'm going to hit left next, and then doing it, it becomes a little bit jarring. But thankfully, they edit down the fighting, the actual gameplay, down to just the essentials. There's a couple of cuts, but for the most part, the people that are playing this are very good. And there's no graphics on the screen. So there's no health bar, there's no power-up points. All that kind of stuff has been removed, which I think is a feature in the game that you can do that.
Yes.
Like a super hard mode sort of thing. And it's really compelling. I mean, if you are interested in a Batman story, one, I would look to see if you can find Batman Arkham Asylum, the movie, which I'm sure exists. If this exists, I'm sure Asylum and City also exist. Then there's Origins, and then now the next one that's coming out is Arkham Knight. And I would recommend going to find them if you're a Batman fan. I'm sure they're probably great.
as someone who has played the game, this would have saved me a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. No, don't get me wrong. I played and loved that game. I really enjoyed it. I almost don't want to watch this because I kind of want to replay the game. You know what I mean? Like, if I ever have time. Does that make any sense? Like, I mean, it's like when you have a movie that you own and love, like say Avengers, and you're over at a friend's place and it's on TV with a bunch of commercials and everything's edited wrong and you don't want to watch it there. You want to wait and you want to go home and you want to watch the thing on your Blu-ray, right? Like, that's the kind of feeling I have when I watch this. It's like, yeah, I've played it before. So the fighting stuff is kind of boring. I really enjoy the story and the dialogue and the drama. But then it's like, well, this is more fun if I play it. And if I ever have time again to play it, then I'll be playing it for the third time, you know, as opposed to the second
time.
Exactly. So, but if you don't have access, like if you don't have a console, which I don't at the moment, and actually I'm pretty sure I own this on Steam. But I mean, if you don't have access or if you don't have the time to sit down and game, it's a YouTube video. You can bookmark your place and just watch 20 minutes at a time, you know, while you're kicking around on your iPad. Like it's fun. I highly recommend it. What about you, Lou? What are your picks this week?
I have two quick ones. If you're going to a convention like PAX, check out an app called Guidebook. PAX teams up with Guidebook, and instead of they give you a flyer that tells you where all the panels are, what's on the show floor, and maps and all that. But that stuff is really kludgy. Get the Guidebook app, download the PAX map, and it literally will, you can make a schedule on where you want to be and what you want to do and at what times, and it will give you reminders. It will tell you where you are in the building. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
It's unbelievable the amount of detail that they have on this thing. You can even search for panels by people. Go, I'm looking for this panelist. I want to see every panel they're in.
Wow.
And it will give you a list of every panel they're listed in.
So it helps you stalk celebrities. That's amazing.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that would be really helpful in a large convention.
Yes. And my second pick, which is another PAX East related thing, is there is a website called takethis.org. It is a charity for mental health. 2 years ago, a video games writer, 3 years ago now, he killed himself and nobody kind of knew what was going on.
Right.
And a bunch of his friends didn't know he was going through depression at the time. And so they started this charity, takethis.org, and they sponsor a room at PAX for those that are overwhelmed by the convention. All the lights, all the sounds, all the people, you can have an anxiety attack. I know I did a couple times.
Mm.
You go there, it's a quiet room. They have counselors and people there to talk to you if you're stressed out or if you're upset. And their website is looking to do more. And check them out. It's takethis.org. And in case you don't know, it's called takethis.org because it is a reference to the first room you go into in the original Legend of Zelda for NES, where the guy has a wooden sword and he goes, "Take this, it's dangerous to go alone."
Okay.
So that's what the reference is.
That's a cool reference. Yeah, that's really cool that they're doing that, you know?
Yeah.
I just got a pick from Phil in the chat room. It is a Humble Bundle, because he knows you're on the show, Lou.
Oh.
And it's a Humble Bundle Books, and it's about the Bloom County Collection.
Yep.
So you can get...
I didn't know that this was out there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I just noticed it earlier today. I forgot all about it.
Yeah, so it's humblebundle.com/books, and the Bloom County Collection is up there right now. It's one of those things where you pay what you want, and you can download, I guess, a whole myriad of PDFs and other formats for Bloom County. I missed Bloom County. This was a little bit before my time. I was a Calvin and Hobbes fan. Bloom County was just a little bit too old for me when I was a kid, and I've never gone back to read them. And I've got a lot of cartoonist friends that just swear by Burke Breathitt and his work. So I might take advantage of this. I do all this planning where I get the PDF for the free thing or the cheap thing, and I download it. And then for whatever reason, I never read comics digitally outside of like checking my web comics in the morning on the internet. And that's mostly Twitter. Like, I don't open up a PDF and read comics. Like, I bought 20 Batman comics for myself at Christmas time this year because they were all on sale for a dollar, and I've read two.
I understand.
And I enjoy Comixology. Like, I, even as a comic artist, I am still training my brain when I sit down to read a comic book that it's not a book. Like, I have a bunch of stuff on a tablet somewhere that I can just go look at. You know, like, I got a Zitz comic book for Christmas, and I really enjoy Zitz. I was reading about 10 pages at a time. I only just finished it, like, last week because it was a physical book, so I would remember to pick it up from my coffee table and read it.
I am very similar. If it's digital, I'm really slow reading it, and I keep forgetting that it's there. If it's a physical book, I kind of marathon through it in, like, two sittings.
Yeah.
I have a pile of trades that I recently just got. A local discount store got a pile of comic books, and they were marked down to 80% off retail value. So I bought, like, what should have been like $300 worth of trades for about $30 or $40.
Wow.
So I have a pile I need to read.
Yeah. Yeah. It piles up fast, man.
Yes, it does.
I'm telling you. It's one of the reasons, that's the other reason I don't have time to play video games, is that I've got so much reading that I should be doing. You know, like, I've got this email filter where I mark it for this needs a reply today. This has to be addressed. And then there's this needs to be read today because it's an important article about either your profession, about web design, something that you're interested in. And it's just like, you should read this when you have a chance. Well, that list just gets longer.
Yes, it does.
You know, like, I hardly ever have the opportunity to go back in and read something. And I should, like, this is what I should be doing in bed before, you know, at night before I go to sleep, is like, go find one or two articles, just read until my eyes get heavy, and then go to bed. You know, and because their articles are not long to read. It's just that you have to remember to go find them, you know? And I mean, the email is the easiest way because it's just, it's an orange flag. It's easy to kind of spot, but man, it's hard to remember. I feel like the internet, especially with social media right now, allows you to have access to so many different things that you are legitimately interested in, mm-hmm. that you wouldn't know about and wouldn't have access to otherwise, that you just don't have time to fulfill all of these pending interest needs, you know?
There is not enough time in a day.
Oh, I've been saying that for a long time. Ryan Murphy and I joke about the 36-hour day all the time. Like, yes. Hey, when you invent that, could you let me know? Because I could really use one of those. You know, there was another... I read a Facebook post the other day by someone that was also another artist, and they were saying, like, you know, working for yourself is amazing. You get to write your own schedule 100%. All, like, you don't have to answer to anybody. You can decide when you want to work 17 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yeah, the life of the freelancer. It's an uphill battle both ways. Yes. In the wind, in the snow, in the rain.
It's times like that I'm glad I have a day job.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Sometimes I get up in the morning and it looks like a PAX East line. You know?
Yes.
Like, it's like everybody's a dot at the other end. And you're just like, well, I can see the end, I think. Or you get to the end and it just bends in a different direction. It's like, oh crap. Here's 100 more things to do today. Well, on that note, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. You can join us there and be in the chat room with Sam and Phil, who have been super helpful tonight. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. You can go to tunein.alphageekradio.com and find out how you can listen on your favorite device. For Citadel Cafe, choose channel 1 at Showtime. Music for this show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. Contact the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. If you've got a pick of the week that you want to recommend, please do. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. And that's it for the show stuff. For my stuff, it's going to be my name, Joel Duggan, at joelduggan.com, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, DeviantArt, the list goes on. You can find everything actually from joelduggan.com. You can find all of my social media links. The most important of which, though, is patreon.com/joelduggan. That is where you can go to support this show. as well as my webcomic, Starcrossed, which I didn't mention at the top of the show. I posted a new comic 2 days ago. If you get value out of this show, for as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron, get some behind-the-scenes comic action, as well as a look at my new book that's coming out this spring. And that's about it. So if you have the $1 a month to spare, then by all means, check out patreon.com/JoelDuggan and let us know what you think. And if you're not a subscription kind of person, that's totally cool. Share the page with somebody else. You know, pay with a tweet. It's a great way for the show to just reach new listeners. You know, a personal recommendation goes a long way. You can follow Lou on the internet in some places.
Easiest way to find me is at BusyZombieLord on Twitter. You can also find my shows at Zombies Ate My Podcast on iTunes or wherever podcasts are. Same with Off the Cuff. And if you're interested in what I have to say about games, check out Indie Love. I am now a writer over at Indie Love.
Oh, nice. I knew that you had mentioned the last time you were on that it looks like you're going to be doing some writing.
Yeah. And that just started before I went to PAX, so I have a couple articles I have to write about stuff I saw. That stuff should be showing up by this weekend.
Cool. Is that indielove.com?
Indie-love.com.
Perfect. You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.